Welcome to the Advanced Persistent Security Podcast, where we discuss the world of IT and cybersecurity. Don't be left in the dark about what is going on in the world around you. Here is your host, Joe Gray.
I'm Joe Gray, and with me today is Roger Siegel. Roger is one of the co-organizers of B-Sides Knoxville, which is coming up May 20th. It's going to be at Scruffy City Hall in the Market Square area of Knoxville. Roger is a principal engineer with Cisco. He has worked with Oak Ridge National Lab and the University of Tennessee, where he received his PhD in computer science, working with genetic algorithms to file format fuzzing. He is a graduate of Wake Forest University. And like I said, he is also one of the co-organizers of B-Sides Knoxville, in addition to being a youth soccer coach. Hi, Roger. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. What did I forget? What did I miss?
I can give you a little bit of background on myself to dig a little deeper. I've been with Cisco for around 10 years. I focused on penetration testing for Cisco's products and services, trying to find vulnerabilities before they actually make it out to customers. And then more recently, I've been playing around in cloud security for Cisco, how to automate security testing for products and services there, and then transitioning over and looking at, I'll put in quotes, big data, but doing data analytics for security research and turning on data to figure out answers to basic security questions.
That's awesome. I think you hit almost every single IT buzzword of today.
Yeah, it tends to be that way.
It is. Well, Cisco is one of the companies that's actually on the leading edge of the market of information security, of cybersecurity, network security, almost all types of security, except maybe not physical security, but aside from that, they are at the cusp of all aspects of security. So it only makes sense that they're going to be involved with the bleeding edge of things like big data, cloud security, cloud technologies, and what have you, and even Internet of Things, which is, I think, the only buzzword you missed, but that's okay.
Yeah, I could throw that out there. I mean, the group I'm with, my top-level group is called STOW, which is a security and trust organization, and they're tasked with, you know, pretty much anything security for Cisco's products and services and building trust in our products and showing the community, you know, that we are taking security seriously and we're proactively trying to make our products better by following best practices and guidelines and testing our products as well. Since I'm a principal engineer in that organization, I get to span multiple groups from the penetration testing side to the big data analytics to a few others. So, yeah, a lot of buzzwords, but Cisco's a great place to work, and I get to see and do a lot of different things.
That is awesome. So normally at this time we would talk about current events, but at the time of recording, there's really not a lot of current events. So I guess we could just do a little back and forth discussion about what we consider to be important in security right now, and possibly talk about some things that came from the Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, that's fine by me.
Awesome. So I'll kick it off with what I consider to be most treacherous to security today. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I did not mention ransomware. Mm-hmm. Do you tend to agree with ransomware being one of the biggest threats, if not number one?
Ransomware is interesting. From my point of view, it's not something that I'm dealing with on a typical day-to-day basis. And that's primarily because of what I would be working on. Instead of, when you look at ransomware is primarily focused to the endpoint systems, like your Windows users, you know, your Mac users, those types of things. But, you know, I look at a lot of infrastructure gear. So, yeah, I agree that ransomware is a big threat to the end user population these days. But, you know, not so much I'm seeing anything from the infrastructure space. But it's not to discount it at all. It's just kind of two different viewpoints of the world.
Exactly. I would say that the infrastructure operating system, specifically iOS, not to be confused with Apple iOS, is a little bit too hardened for ransomware to really be effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, and two, I think there's not as many attackers focusing on those particular devices. It would be interesting to see an attack that would actually try to put some ransomware on some network device, whether that be Cisco or any of the other gear makers out there. There's a number of infrastructure gear providers. It's just a different shift in thinking from endpoint systems to infrastructure systems.
Right, and it is kind of interesting because of the whole fact if you can survive without an endpoint, you can't necessarily survive without the infrastructure. I think a lot of that has to do with market share as well, because if you look at an organization, there's going to be a lot of routing equipment, but at the same time, you're going to have maybe a 1-50, a 1-100, or even a 1-1,000 ratio in terms of routing equipment to endpoints.
Yeah, and you have to take into account other aspects of the infrastructure as well. Besides router equipment, you've got your firewalls that could be out there. And then also looking at your video conferencing systems, if somebody has telepresence systems out there or any type of video conferencing endpoints. Those are something that are becoming more and more vital to the businesses for their communications.
Right, and also VoIP.
Yep.
I'll use as a segue into my next biggest concern. I think part of the other reason why you don't see routing equipment infected with ransomware is because you typically only have privileged users accessing it, and the means by which a lot of the endpoints get infected would be social engineering and phishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's on endpoint systems, you've got more of a diversity of software. There are more applications running there. You have users who are firing up web browsers on their end systems and surfing to random websites where, as your infrastructure gear has their steady day-to-day job, they're routing packets or they're blocking malicious packets, and they're processing those, or from your telepresence or systems, they're setting up calls. So it's very regularized, and there's not a lot of difference in what kind of traffic they're actually seeing. But from an end-user system, they could be doing mail, they could be surfing the web, they could be watching a movie, and it's easier to send an email to somebody as an endpoint system and get them to go to a malicious website than to get a router to visit a malicious website, because that would do nothing for them, and they don't really visit websites, right? They're just routing the packets underneath. So.
Exactly. And with regards to social engineering and phishing, if you were going to target infrastructure, well, actually, personally, if I were going to target infrastructure with social engineering, I wouldn't target the infrastructure itself. I would target the administrators.
Exactly.
I would attempt to find a way to phish that user, gain their credentials, gain access to their system, or that would be the knowledge side of social engineering. The other side being the performance of an action. I would try to coerce that engineer or technician or whatever into creating a firewall rule that would either route all traffic to me or allow me access in using whatever I want instead of having to firewalk my way through.
Yeah, and that kind of bleeds into another big concern is password management, right? And how people get duped out of their passwords by people social engineering them, or even just not using strong passwords at all. Two attack vectors, one that you brought up to get into networking gear, you get phished to get your password for some particular reason. A sysadmin would get phished for their password and they would get it. But then also system administrators not using strong credentials or not using two-factor authentications on systems. That dramatically lowers the barrier for entry into core infrastructure gear, even to the point where if somebody were to compromise an endpoint system and it had access to the management plane, you could try to brute force passwords on the infrastructure gear, gain access, and then you've owned the whole system, the whole network.
Exactly, and this is a discussion that's been radiating on all the other security podcasts as of late as well, in terms of poor password policies, bad security, phishing, and what have you. Basically, this exact conversation has occurred elsewhere, and Honestly, I think for an organization, if we're seeing someone using weak passwords, I would say that's probably the tip of the security iceberg, but it certainly doesn't hurt or help matters. For example, when I was at SANS training at the beginning of April, we were doing our labs using password crack utilities. The word password we cracked in seconds. And then one of the users, the username was Homer and the password was Homer Homer. We got that one within a couple of minutes. But just substituting the number 8 for the letter D in the word password significantly slowed it down. Just as a test, I allocated 2 cores and 10 gigs of RAM on an isolated virtual machine to try to crack the password. I let it run for the remainder of the day, which was about 5 hours, and it didn't crack that password or the far more complex password.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Obviously, state actors have a lot more processing power.
Yeah.
So, and that becomes a bigger problem. That's where you need those more complex passwords and those non-human readable, non-dictionary passwords. That's something that I personally have been heavily advocating lately just because it's becoming a growing concern.
Yeah, and it also calls into question, and this has been for years called into question, even the scheme of authentication through passwords. It was great when it first came out, and it's held us over for years, but is there something better that we should be using for authentication? A lot of people point to biometrics, but biometrics have vulnerabilities as well. Imagine if you have your fingerprint that you're using to authenticate to a system. Somebody breaks into that system, and they steal that biometric data, right? And they could replay it in some way, shape, or form. You can't change the biometric data at that point, right? You can't change your fingerprint. You can't change your iris, things like that. So really, a lot of research going into different authentication mechanisms that could quite possibly change how users prove their identity to a system. I think that's where everything needs to go, because you can't mandate everybody to have strong passwords. It's just people don't want to adhere to that. They don't want to think of them. They don't want to try to remember them, which is where password managers came into play.
Right. And honestly, I'm actually a fan of password management software. I used to be so heavily against it, almost combatively against it. And then I started doing some research, and they're using 256-bit encryption to store it. You have one master password that obviously should be strong in terms of greater than 14 characters, 3 of the 4 typefaces, what have you. And you should use that password management cycle where you change it every 30, 60, 45, or 90 days. But at the same time, that allows you to use that one strong password to protect far more stronger passwords that you're using on other websites that, or web applications or anything really, that allow you to use, I'll be honest, most of the passwords I used were about 14 to 16 characters. Mm-hmm. Since I've started using password management software, I'm now up in the 24 character range using all 4 typefaces.
Yep.
So,
I totally agree there. I am a fan of password managers, strictly for the fact that there's just nothing else better. And so I really don't know my passwords to most of the websites out there. I've got my
exactly.
One strong password that will get me into my password manager, and then that holds all the other passwords from there. And those are maxed out to 24 or 30 characters. What's disturbing is when you go to websites that put arbitrary limitations on the password length that you can have. When a website for pretty notable companies tell you can only have 10 characters in your password. That
right.
signifies a legacy system behind the scenes, legacy code, and it really throws into question, can they handle my PII, and do you use them at that point?
If I were a malicious person, I would say, perhaps I should run a vulnerability scan or nmap against this target, but obviously I'm ethical, so I wouldn't do that without written consent. But the other thing that comes to mind with that is, it's a great example, and you hit the nail on the head. I was signing up on a portal site to one of my utilities providers, and they said that I had to have a minimum of 8 characters, a maximum of 14 characters, but it could only be alphanumeric. So I can understand if they don't allow apostrophe, less than, greater than, semicolon, and hyphens. I can understand that. That makes perfect sense. But to say no symbols whatsoever? Come on now.
I mean, I would throw it as a question if they take a character class out to begin with. Their code and their systems behind the scenes should be resilient enough, and they should be able to handle that appropriately.
Right.
You know, you look at modern day web frameworks and web application attacks, and you know the common ones out there: XSS, SQLI, command injection. And when you see people starting to take certain characters out of passwords that would relate to those types of attacks, that to me questions their entire web application. Where else are they not filtering characters correctly? Where can I inject my own code? Where can I do a command injection in their systems? Because obviously they're running the legacy systems, which is legacy code, or they just don't grasp how to build a web application that is resilient.
Right. They're going for they're taking the direction of risk avoidance in the complete wrong direction.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will continue this discussion and start talking about B-Sides Knoxville. Sit tight, we'll be back.
Are you looking for a place to advertise to the unique audience of IT security professionals and enthusiasts? Look no further. Advanced Persistent Security is seeking sponsors. This slot could be yours. Contact sales at advancedpersistentsecurity.net for more information.
We're back from our break, and with me still is Roger Siegel. We've been talking about password management, ransomware, social engineering, and other security issues in this podcast. Now we're going to shift gears and kind of talk about the culmination of where Roger is: threat hunting. Roger, are you involved in threat hunting?
Yeah, a little bit. It's kind of peripheral. There is the data analytics work that I'm starting to do, which brings together threat hunting and helping other users in Cisco, some of our other teams, with threat hunting.
So you see threat hunting growing and becoming a more viable aspect of information security as a whole?
It seems like the trend is more and more. You've got your IPSs, you've got your IDSs, add signatures, but you also have these threats that are not detected. And so that's where you bring in people who are being labeled threat hunters to try to pull together multiple sources of information to figure out when are these more sophisticated attacks occurring, how long have they been in these systems, and how to remediate and figure out how to generate better signatures to push down to the endpoint or the networking devices to figure out what is going on and to stop it before it happens.
So you don't believe this to be a flash in the pan fad within the security realm? You see it being something kind of long term of sorts?
I don't know. I think it's too early to tell. There definitely seems to be a need. But I think there needs some time for it to work itself out and figure out if the threat hunting is something that is viable as a long-term career job. You know, it may be one of those 1 or 2 years. It's a buzzword that everybody's throwing around, and it's really labeling something that's already occurring in your InfoSec org. But it's just time will tell. And I think as devices get smarter, and bring together more sources of data, some of this is probably going to be automated, and it'll help out in finding the threats and doing what is being termed threat hunting. And it's more about how is everybody else doing it? What is the differences between the techniques that everybody is trying today? What are the different sources of data that everybody is looking at? Is there common threads between there? Is there partnerships that can happen between, you know, different government organizations or companies to help with sharing information about what threats they're seeing? So all these are different verticals that need to get discussed and figured out and see what it means when you're talking about threat hunting.
I couldn't have said it better myself. One of the big things that I've been thinking about in terms of threat hunting is it more philosophical or is it more scientific? Is it more art or science?
Yeah.
And honestly, I think the answer to that is yes.
Exactly. And you could think about it the same way as penetration testing. You look at penetration testing in the 90s, and people would talk about it. They would say, is that really something that somebody's going to sit down and do as a job, right? Are there enough vulnerabilities out there and ways to hack into systems where somebody would be paid as a consulting gig to go in and find vulnerabilities for a company? And can you make that into a standardized process that people can follow with a standard set of tools? Or is it this kind of artful dance that somebody comes up with, and they have to figure out all these different puzzles and do it in an artful, masterful way? And the answer to that is yes, it's all of the above. So it could be the same thing with threat hunting.
Exactly. And the one thing I do really like about threat hunting is this is something coming from within industry. This is not something coming from sales. Mm-hmm. This is not threat intelligence. This mm-hmm. is not next-gen something, next-gen malware protection, next-gen endpoint protection, mm-hmm. advanced next-gen APT protection. Just let that stew out for a second.
Yeah.
Advanced next-generation advanced persistent threat protection.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's something I kind of see problematic in terms of industry. A lot of times the security industry and the security sales industry tend to kind of let sales dictate what security is doing, when it should be, you know, more of security identifies a need, turns it over to sales. Sales finds a way to solve the problem, and hence a product is born, as opposed to making a problem so that you have a product, or making a problem sound much worse than it is so that you can sell a solution.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And that's what we try to do. We try to listen to customers. We try to listen to our internal teams and figure out what pain points they're having. You know, Cisco runs a massive network. So we get to listen to the problems that we're having there, to the problems that our customers are having, and try to build products and services that actually help them, instead of creating a marketing hype around some product that was built in an ivory tower, or some services built in an ivory tower, where there may not be any demand and there may not be any real need.
Right. And we can always reference, when talking about overhyping things, we can always reference Badlock. It got the logo, it got the website, it got the jingle, and it fizzled. So for the final portion of this segment, Roger, what really interests you within security right now?
Oh, it's a tough question. I should have prepared some. What interests me in security right now? I would say I'm always interested in new penetration testing techniques. It's, you know, something that I've always loved doing. You know, it used to be that it was amazing to do buffer overflows, right? And then, you know, that turned into be an old hat thing. And then the defenders put in protections like DEP and ASLR. And then the next coolest thing was, how do you get around DEP and ASLR? And then it turned into, how do you use return-oriented programming to get by all these different protections? And you know, those types of things always interest me. And that's old hat stuff now. It's been around for 4 or 5 years, you know, ROP and return-oriented programming. But now it's pivoted, and there's a lot more emphasis on web application attacks, and how do you come up with new ways to attack websites. That's fun for me now. And then also just bypassing security mechanisms, secure protections that are baked into systems and executables.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. And I agree. You know, in the past, like when I was first studying for CISSP back in 2010 into 2011, everything was focused around buffer overflow. You really didn't need to know a lot about cross-site scripting or SQL injection. Everything was around, you know, GRC pretty much. Mm-hmm. Now the paradigm is kind of shifting, and you hit the nail on the head. You really have to look at the web app side of things, because well, everything's got them. With the Internet of Things, I mean, that's the reason baby monitors and insulin pumps have been vulnerable, because they have web interfaces that use default credentials. And take a look at the energy industry. You can go to Shodan's website and find all kinds of vulnerable PLCs right there. It's just a matter of time before you, and you may even be able to do this, honestly. It's just a matter of time before you can go on Shodan and look at baby monitors. Yeah. It's a matter of time before you can go on Shodan and look at insulin pumps. I mean, that may be a stretch, the insulin pumps especially. Baby monitors, maybe. But to get my point, it's already there. It's just like VNC Roulette, where people have vulnerable versions of VNC. You sign up for VNC Roulette, and you just start seeing random people's desktops, just like chat roulette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. It's like looking at the path of least resistance, always. You know, in the beginning, it was software that is on end-user systems, Windows. It was really easy to exploit. And then once that got to common knowledge and everybody could do it, you know, we're talking up through mid-2000s, and then protections got put in place to make it harder, people started to look at different targets, and then you saw a rise in the web application attacks, because that was the new easiest target to do. And then you saw more protections being put in our operating systems and our applications. You saw more protections being put in for web applications. So then people are looking at different targets, and you see the rise of car hacking. And all these different pivots to different products, they typically have the same flaws as the ones prior. They just don't have the protections built into them. So it's fun to see that cat and mouse game and the pivoting to different to different industries, different products, and seeing the same mistakes being made by engineers over and over.
That pretty much nails it. I mean, if you look at, I'm going to reference a Bruce Schneier quote. If you give people the opportunity to either be secure or look at videos of cats, they're going to pick cats every time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that you use the cat and mouse analogy, because that's exactly right. You know, if you've seen one episode of Tom and Jerry, you know exactly how the episode's going to pan out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same applies for security. You know, you mentioned car hacking. I've mentioned Internet of Things. Those are the new web apps of old.
Mm-hmm.
And web apps now, because everybody's moving to the cloud, they're kind of becoming old news, because as more people adopt them, more information is gathered, better advances are made, and the maturity increases, so therefore the security increases, and then, you know, it loses its buzzword feel.
Yep, and you saw that with smartphones. And in the few years ago, when the iPhone came out, Android phones came out, everybody was a race to hack it, to race to jailbreak it. You saw a lot of easy attacks. The next couple of generations, the attacks got more complex because the Apple and other companies were raced to put in protection mechanisms against people trying to unlock the phones or to bypass security protection mechanisms. So, yes, it's always a cat and mouse game. You find out what the attackers are doing. You try to mitigate that as best as possible. Ensure that they don't do harm or steal personal information or any information whatsoever, and then put it back out, see what happens, and then react as best and as fast as you can.
Exactly. So on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to discuss the B-sides Knoxville. Sit tight.
Are you subscribed to this podcast? If not, please do so on iTunes and at advancedpersistentsecurity.net/podcast.
Okay, we're back from the break. Now we're going to talk about B-sides Knoxville. So this is the security B-sides. It is local to Knoxville, but just so you understand what the B-sides are, they are a framework for organizing and holding security conferences. It's been around for just over 5 years. This came from frustrations with Black Hat and DEF CON, kind of like the migration, the pilgrimage of security people, if you will. So they decided to have it on their own B-side. So the name stuck. Per the Wikipedia, it came from Mike Don and Jack Daniel and some others. And various cities have B-sides all over the place. Atlanta, Las Vegas, of course Knoxville, Nashville, everywhere. So if you are listening and you want to find if you have a B-sides, check it out. Just Google B-sides in your city. There is a formal website you can take a look at as well and find out. And if not, get with some other security professionals in your area and start one. Moving on to B-sides, Knoxville. B-sides Knoxville is happening May 20th at Scruffy City Hall in Knoxville, Tennessee. Scruffy City Hall is in the Market Square part of town. It's a single day event, and basically the classes that you are going to observe would be learning to hack RFID for under $500, Gopher Anatomy 101, Forensics Impossible, self-destructing thumb drives, building a test lab, Hello Kitty, Level Up, which is practical Windows privilege escalation, peeking under the hood with Frida, Pentester Agility, look what I found in potential, Pentester Agility, what I look for in potential team members, PowerShell for cyber warriors, scripting myself out of a job, automating the penetration test with APT2, stack smashing protection bypass via pthreads, a case of mini UPnP buffer overflow, the best campfire tales that reverse engineers tell, the joy of sandbox mitigations, the natural laws and consequences of cyber insecurity, car talk, and how we pawned Risker's Rhymey Challenge in 2 days, and then also introduction to automotive security. So, Roger, I've basically given away your entire schedule of different talks, not necessarily the chronologic schedule, but give us some more information. Get us in the know.
Yeah. So at a high level, a little bit about B-sides, I'll drill down into the talk too. For B-sides Knoxville, this is the second year that we're having it. And we're fortunate because our attendance has been through the roof. This year, we're expecting 250 people to come to the event at Scruffy City Hall. We actually run three different venues all at the same time, so three different tracks. Scruffy City Hall is our main track. We have a partnership with the Knoxville Entrepreneurial Center, KEC. They're hosting us for another track. And then right next door, we have Preservation Pub that's hosting a half-day track for us there. Admissions that will get you into the conference. I think we're going to have custom posters printed for everybody. I was talking to the printer today, so hopefully that's going to go through. Really, really cool concert posters for people to take home. Get you lunch. I think I'm going to order a bunch of donuts for everybody, coffee. I'd actually get you two drink tickets as well, so you can have beers at the bar while the talks are going on. Scruffy City is just an amazing venue. It's just a cool place to be. And just a shout out real quick to our sponsors, and then I'll dive down into some of the talks from our sponsor side of things. We've got platinum sponsors with Cisco, Cadre, Information Security, Checkpoint Software Technologies, and then our gold level ones are Sword and Shield Enterprise Security, Tenable Network Security, Optiv, and Tech Systems, and then we've got AppSec Consulting and RYSC Corp. So all those companies have banded together, given us some money, helped us out on resources, and to help all this thing go through. Now, from a talk side of things, the ones that you've mentioned, that's all that we're having there, and it runs the gamut. You've got your introduction talks, like how to build a penetration testing lab or how to break into the industry if you're a newcomer, all the way up to those expert level talks from individuals like Travis Goodspeed on his Campfire Tales of Reverse Engineering, and he's an excellent speaker, very Appalachian voice, good storyteller there. And even we've got somebody from Project Zero actually coming this year with James Forshaw, who will talk about Windows protections and bypasses there and mistakes that happen. So we've got that wide range. We've even got varying topics from you know, your exploitation types of talks to, you know, your starting out type of talks, to even a couple of talks on car security, which is always a hot topic these past couple of years. But it's a wide range, and it's suited for anybody from beginner to expert.
Awesome. So what should people that are attending the event expect?
You should expect a lot of networking from people around the world. We're really lucky on attendance. A lot of B-sides are just regional, and they get people from just around their local city. We're lucky that we've got people coming from the region, and also from the West Coast. We've got people coming international as well. A couple of the talks that are being given are from people from Israel. I think we've got a couple of people who are coming from India, and you know, just a lot of regional representation as well. So it's a good opportunity to network with fellow engineers, fellow security practitioners, penetration testers, and hear a lot of cool talks and have some beers with everybody. It's a fun time. I always enjoy it.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, you're having somebody come from Atlanta even,
exactly.
Which granted, you know, truth be told, I'm from the Knoxville area, but I'm making a three-day weekend out of it. And I mean, I'm looking here on the schedule site, you've got speakers from Carfax, from Rapid7, Sword and Shield, Cisco. It's shaping up to be a really good event.
Yep, and we're trying to build on it every year. And hopefully, from the demand that we've seen, which technically we're sold out right now, but the way we've got a wait list. If you hop on the wait list, I'm pretty sure we're going to have some extra tickets to send out to the wait list. But we're trying to build on it, and hopefully, you know, we did 250 this year. I want to go upwards, maybe 350 the following years, and then see if we can turn this conference into a place to be, you know, a place to come, and each year get more and more talks and better content,
and make it become something called Volcon.
Yeah. I don't know if they like the affiliation.
Well, it's in Knoxville. What else are you going to call it?
It's true.
Moonshine Con?
You could. We are at a bar, so we could have moonshine for everybody.
This is true. You could use one of your two drink tickets on it.
Yeah. Yep, they probably serve it.
Probably. But nonetheless, it's... You know, this is one of these things I'm very excited for. As I've said in previous podcasts, I've been to a couple of ISSA meetings. I've been to a few ISC Squared chapter meetings, and I've been to SANS training, and that's really about it. I've never been to a true B-sides or con, so I'm really excited for this myself. So what do people need to know about the event coming to it? About, say, what time to arrive, parking, how should they dress, how should they act? Assuming for people who have never been to a conference of the sort before.
Yeah, so arrival, we're going to be opening registration up at 8 a.m. We're working through the kinks from registration last year, and I think we simplified it a lot. So I don't think it's going to be hard to get in, so there shouldn't be any long lines or anything like that. So I would arrive, you know, 8:30. There'll be donuts and coffee for everybody, so come hang out before the first talks begin. We start promptly at 9. For parking, there's a lot of great parking spots in Knoxville. Now, there will be paid parking at the Market Square Garage. That's the closest one that you're going to have. There's some on-street parking, and then there's a couple other garages around the area within walking distance to the venue. So parking shouldn't be an issue. You just might have to pay a few bucks to park it near the venue. For you know your dress and how you act, it's a really casual environment. I mean, we're in a bar in Market Square at midday. So you know, dress casual. Come you know willing to have fun, meet new people, and you know if you're a drinker, have a couple of drinks, have a couple of beers. Great time to network it and meet some people that you might not ordinarily get to meet, especially when you're at bigger conferences where you might not run in the same circles. You know, people from Project Zero, it's not every day you get to run into those guys or you know, have a beer with Travis Goodspeed. He'll give you some good some good talks and some good stories. So yeah, just come, ready to have some fun.
Awesome. And if you have business cards, I'm sure that's encouraged as well, correct?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, any type of business cards you want to hand out to people. And we'll also have tables for all of our sponsors there. You'll get to meet and talk with some of the companies that have sponsored, as well as we'll have our community, what we call community sponsors. I'm still trying to nail down exactly who all that's going to be, but we'll have some, hopefully, like the Maker Space for Knoxville will be there and a few others.
Awesome. So is there anything else that you want everyone to know with regards to the actual Knoxville B-Sides event?
Pretty much, well, first we want to thank the sponsors and how their help with everything. We wouldn't have been able to put it on without them. And then also the community for banding together and then wanting to come out and wanting to mingle and hang out with everybody. So, you know, just the whole vibe of it is, come have fun, come hang out, and learn a lot about security from the introductory stuff all the way up to the expert stuff. And don't hesitate to ask questions or come up to somebody and introduce yourself. Everybody's friendly.
Awesome. And we're going to take our final break, and when we come back, Roger's going to tell you how to get in contact with him and give you some parting wisdom, and we will see you off. Sit tight.
Don't forget to check out our blog at advancedpersistentsecurity.net/blog. Follow us on Twitter at @ADVPersistentSEC and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/advancedpersistentsecurity.
Okay, we're back and we're going to get some parting advice from Roger. We're going to get his contact information and then we're going to see him off. The floor is yours, Roger.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess for parting advice, you know, this took me a little bit to learn, but I think invest in your community, invest in your security community, build it up, go to meetups, go to your local ISSA groups, you know, anything like that, and meet and greet your security professionals in the area and then work together to start doing events, you know, bring a B-Sides to your area and just when you go to these other security events, meet and mingle with people and build your connections and learn what's going on. You know, it's great. It's fun. And it will never disappoint. For contact, if you're looking for more information, at B-Sides, it's info@bsidesknoxville.com. And then if you're looking for me, I've got a Twitter account that I rarely post anything on, but I'm still there and sometimes I do. My Twitter handle is RajWFU. And yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good time. And I can't wait to be at the event and see you there. And I'm sure we'll be talking some more.
Awesome. And you can follow B-Sides Knoxville on Twitter. How?
It's just B-Sides Knoxville. And
perfect.
Also, we've got a website, bsidesknoxville.com, as well.
And don't forget, #BSK2016. So also, I want to point out that Advanced Persistent Security has partnered with EC Council to provide you offer codes to get into Hacker Halted training and the Hacker Halted conference at a discounted rate. Hacker Halted is occurring in Atlanta, Georgia, September 11th to 14th, and then also the conference on September 15th and 16th. Come to our website, follow the link to Hacker Halted, and enter promo code HHAPSTRN for $1,000 off your training. That includes your certification exam attempt and 4 days of training, lunch included. Those alone are of at least a $600 value. You also get admission to the conference. Using offer code HHAPSCON, that will get you into the conference both days for $35. Without this offer code, the cost is $200. So, as I said, come to advancedpersistentsecurity.net and get the promo codes, follow the link to the Hacker Halted event page, and enter those promo codes to receive the discounts. That's all for today. See you again on Thursday. Until then, stay secure.
Thank you for listening to the Advanced Persistent Security Podcast. Until next time, stay secure and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast.